Good morning, this is Mason Vasquez and you're listening to Cougar Vinyl for CougRadio.com. Today is a very special day. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the landmark record Abbey Road by the Beatles. It was released in 1969 on September 26th, and today just happens to be that day. Today with me I have a very special guest, my friend from high school and Beatles extraordinaire, Robert Ibanez.
Hi, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to start off with a song everybody knows. This is the iconic Come Together by the Beatles. That was the opening track for Abbey Road. That was Come Together. God, what a great way to open that record. It's just such a great setup for what you're about to hear.
I really agree. I really feel like it's a great example of how to open a record. You know, when you listen to it, you know that you're about to listen to something great.
I absolutely agree. You know, that song was actually originally written as a campaign tune for Timothy Leary.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, against Ronald Reagan as the governor for California in 1969. Was it 68? I can't remember.
Oh, that's very interesting. Oh, you know what? I actually remember reading about that. So I actually read a book about kind of the messages behind the songs, and there was this wonderful quote that John Lennon kind of responded back to Leary's, you know, kind of criticism, that he kind of took it back and made it a Beatles song. He said something along the lines of, you know, he was a tailor, and John was a tailor, and he was just a customer, and had ordered a suit, but never returned it, so he just simply sold it to someone else, and it's just kind of funny.
That's awesome. A little bit about that. Wasn't there, like, a copyright thing with, like, Chuck Berry?
Yeah, there was, I think... Back in 1973, the publisher of Chuck Berry's song "You Can't Catch Me," he actually sued John Lennon because of the similar sound and lyrics from the song, and they eventually settled it out. But it was just kind of interesting.
Oh, interesting!
It was more of a nod to Chuck Berry.
All right, sorry guys, I had the wrong mic on for Robbie.
Oh,
that's okay.
All good.
Yeah. No, it's good. We're still cruising by. Hopefully you could hear that a little bit on my mic, but you can go ahead and just reiterate whatever you said a little bit.
Yeah, no. You know, Mason just talked about how, you know, the song was kind of actually sued. You know, the publisher of Chuck Berry's song "You Can't Catch Me" in 1973 actually sued John Lennon, and because of the similar sound and lyrics from the song. And, you know, I think John meant it more as a nod to Chuck Berry rather than, you know, just ripping it off.
That sounds like something you'd do.
Yeah.
It's very John. All right, next track is clearly a George Harrison song, but it was on a Beatles record, and that's cool too. This is "Something" by the Beatles. that was Something by the Beatles. It's a very Harrison-influenced track, but you can still feel that there is a lot of presence from the rest of the group.
Yeah, no, I certainly agree. You know, not to sound cheesy, but Something is Something. It's really a great track to follow up after Come Together. It really pulls back from, like, the banger of the beginning of the album, and the lyrics alone are just so mesmerizing. I just love Something. It's great.
Absolutely, me too. You know, this was the first A-side that Harrison got, wasn't it,
as a single? Yeah, it was, actually, which is pretty crazy. You know, usually it's probably John or Paul that were kind of the frontmen, and yeah, it was the first single off of Abbey Road and the first A-track for George.
All right, yeah. You know, I thought they released this single, too. Like, didn't they release this before the record? Which was against their rules or something?
I'm not entirely sure, but it was flip flop. So Something was the A track, right? Mm. And on the other side was Come Together.
Mm.
And it's, you know, kind of interesting to think that it was kind of opposite and for the album now. But something else that was kind of cool to think about was, you know, there is kind of a, I don't know how to really word this, but kind of something interesting with James Taylor. With this song, and not most people would probably think about James Taylor other than maybe the first opening line, Something in the Way She Moves. That's mm-hmm. actually a James Taylor song, like title. James Taylor actually was recording in Abbey Studios when he was recording that song, and maybe George probably heard it or something like that, and he kind of ran with it, which is kind of interesting.
Nice. Wasn't he going to call that song I Feel Fine?
Yeah, he actually was, but he stopped because it was a Beatles track already. So it's kind of ironic that George kind of, in a way, took part of his song and made it his own. And but James Taylor, I think he was a good sport about it and really, really enjoyed.
Yeah, and I think that's the spirit of a lot of late 60s rock and roll, is that you take a lot of what you learn from the previous whatever, and you put it into your own thing and make something new, and that's where music comes from, and it's beautiful, and it's expressed greatly here on the record.
Absolutely.
All right, next track is Maxwell's Silver Hammer.
Joan was quizzical, studied metaphysical science in the home. Late nights all alone with a test tube. Oh, 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 oh. Maxwell Edison, majoring in medicine. Screaming from the gate.
What an interesting Beatles song. It's a very McCartney-esque, I guess, because of that bum, bum, bum kind of feel, which is very indicative of his writing. Yeah, absolutely.
I absolutely love this song. It really kind of strikes a chord with me in my like childhood. My dad would always play the Beatles songs, and this one always like stuck out as such a playful, fun song to kind of jam out to. And you know, the meaning behind it's kind of funny. You know, it's, you know, it's, it sounds as it's playful, but it's, you know, it's kind of a sad story. You know, it's about, you know, someone striking a hammer down onto some, you know, innocent people. You know, this girl and then the teacher and then a judge. It's kind of, it's kind of morbid sometimes, but it's a fun song. I love it.
Oh yeah. Wasn't that about, you said karma?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's about, I think it's about karma. You know, the Beatles came back from India, and, you know, recorded White Album and all that stuff. And, you know, very influenced about the methodology and ideology over there. And, you know, karma was kind of a big thing. And I think maybe Paul and John wanted to write about that idea, and they came up with Maxwell Silver Hammer. And,
perhaps, yeah.
You know, it's about like a hammer coming down on you. It's like karma, you know? It's, it's kind of crazy.
Later influence karma. Like that John Lennon track, Instant Karma,
and
his later stuff. Yep. You see a lot of seeds being planted. And you were talking about how the Beatles are really good storytellers. And
yeah, they really are. You know, it's just kind of crazy that they're able to, in such a short amount of time, right, you know, a couple minutes, tell this story that it paints such a vivid picture in your mind, and you know, you feel all these sorts of things. They're very expressions that come out are just very cool, and I love the song to this day. I think it's one of their best songs. I personally like it a lot.
All right, nice. I think it's a great track too. All right, here's the next one on the record. This is Oh Darling.
Believe me.
All right, that was Oh Darling by the Beatles. That is the fourth track off their 1969 record, Abbey Road. If you're just tuning in, this is the 50th anniversary special. It came out on September 26, 1969, and today just happens to be 50 years after that. I feel like that song is not necessarily my favorite, but it's a good display of McCartney's vocal stylings, being able to hit that raspy tone at such a high interval. It really shows their roots as a band influenced by 50s music.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very enjoying, like, I can enjoy the song. The whole album, I enjoy it. But there are certainly some tracks I enjoy more than others, and Oh Darling is not one of those. I still love it, but, you know, I can still tap my foot to it and kind of listen to it in the background. But, yeah, no, I agree with you. The vocals are so passionate. I think Paul really shines on this record.
Absolutely. And it sounds like it's again, seeds for a future solo record. This kind of reminds me of Paul's work on Maybe I'm Amazed in his debut record that he did all the music for, with Linda, of course.
Right.
All right. Next one is Octopus's Garden. Yeah.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been in his octopus's garden in the shade. I'd ask my friends to come and see an octopus's garden with me. Under the sea, in an octopus's garden, in the shade. We would be warm, below the storm, in our little hideaway beneath the waves. Resting our head on the seabed, in an octopus's garden, near a cave. Octopus's garden in the shade. We would shout and swim about the coral that lies beneath the waves. Oh, what joy for every girl and boy, knowing they're happy and they're safe. We would be so happy, you and me. No one there to tell us what to do. I'd like to be in an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you. In an octopus's garden with you.
That was Octopus's Garden by the Beatles. It's a Ringo track. It's the second and final song that Ringo wrote for the Beatles. And it shows. it's a little goofy, but
yeah, it really is. But, you know, it's just kind of that playful childhood kind of song. At least for me, though, you know, it's kind of funny. I of course see an octopus, you know, in the song, but I really see more of
Ringo's head on an octopus.
Yeah, something so bizarre. No, I see the Muppet Show, which is kind of not. I mean, it's not normal to, you know, to think about that, but, you know, there was this part of the Muppet Show when I was growing up. My folks would always play the Muppets, and there was something about Kermit singing this song, and it was underwater. It was so goofy, and so like every time I hear this song, I just kind of have to laugh because
I guess Ringo and Kermit have very similar voices. Eh?
Yeah, maybe they do.
No, it's not a terrible song, and it's not bad in any way. I joke, but it's a very integral part to the record. It's part of the journey, you know, man.
Absolutely.
You're gonna have your ups and downs.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it definitely adds on to the storytelling aspect. It's such a strange thing to write about, but you know,
I agree.
Then again, like the Beatles can never be really predicted, right? And especially with what they're gonna write about. And Octopus's Garden is just one of those tracks that are just you're just in for the ride, you know, through the bubbles and all.
I know. I could do without the bubbles. But you can hear the guitar style is very similar to Don't Pass Me By from the previous record, the White Album. Ringo definitely had a style. Even when he was only writing two songs, you could tell when it was a Ringo Starr track.
Right.
All right. The next one is a 7-minute piece. It is I Want You, She's So Heavy. Those are literally the only lyrics. Apparently John wanted to be minimalist in writing it, and it is very minimalist. It's just a blues tune. It actually kind of reminds me of Come Together, how the album opens.
Right.
It's somewhat minimalist, but a lot of the interesting parts comes from the instrumentation and the harmonies and the singing and the Beatles, what they're going to be doing, how different it's going to be each verse. And this is the last track on side one, and we'll lead into side two shortly after. Here is I Want You, She's So Heavy.
Thank you.
interesting how that cuts out. Would you like to explain, Robbie?
So apparently, that's just from the tape running out. They just played until they couldn't play anymore, and it just ends abruptly, just like that.
Nice. They're trying to get a filler track, apparently, for the first side to end, and they're just like, I don't want to write any more songs.
Just, I guess not.
Let's just finish it.
Yeah.
What a great song, though. There's that minimalist aspect that's in Come Together with John's writing, and what we were talking about how it shows Yoko's influence on John's later songwriting. As an avant-garde artist, she sort of influenced him in that way.
Yeah, I think his writing style, from if you look from earlier on to now, or on Abbey Road, it's very, very different, and I think that's because of probably Yoko, as much as that's for best or for worse, but she definitely, I think, influenced him, and that style of writing where it's just so minimal makes it so much more powerful, and you can just resonate it with
it. Does it, and you can do so much more with it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, minimalist doesn't necessarily mean it's not more dense. In fact, it could be the most dense song, and it's three chords. It just depends on what you do with it, and I think they play with that a lot, especially in their instrumental playing. And it's different every time they play each verse. It sounds different. There's feedback from the guitar before the solo starts. There's all kinds of different things. His voice is different in every aspect. There's more instruments the next time. It's completely different, and it's all based on a minor blues riff, right? It's just incredible what they could do with that, and in 7 minutes, and
It doesn't even feel like 7 minutes sometimes when you're just like so minutes. Involved and so entranced by the song. You're like, wow, this is just going on forever and ever, but you don't really feel that. And then it ends abruptly, of course, and you're like, okay, well then I guess that's over. But it's great.
It is it's very true. That it does put you into a trance at the end there, and it's a great way to end side A and seg into the opening track of side two, which is a beautiful song that is so bright and just contrasts everything that we just heard from that song. So here is side two, opener of Abbey Road. This is Here Comes the Sun.
Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. I say it's all right. All right.
What a gleaming light of hope after such a dark ending to the first side of the record,
yeah,
you know?
It's a breath of fresh air.
Breath of fresh air. It's like seeing the sun for the first time. Yeah, you have exactly. It for 7 minutes and 47 seconds.
Right. It really, I feel like Here Comes the Sun is such a rebirth. It's such a beautiful way to kind of, in a sense, restart the album. It really kind of feels like you're starting fresh and new. And the song itself, you know, beyond the context of, you know, the coming songs and even before, it really stands out.
Absolutely.
Among the whole discography of the Beatles. I love Here Comes the Sun. It's probably one of my favorite songs of the Beatles. The lyrics and the guitar, it's just amazing. I love it.
Absolutely. It's a gorgeous song. It's one of the best songs ever written. I think it's just everything about it is almost perfect. It's just so excellent. Count on George to be the optimist, right?
Right. Exactly. He's always tapped into the spiritual psyche, you know? And
yeah,
I think he actually, you know, he wrote this probably because of such of the turmoil nearing the end of the Beatles, you know?
Right.
A bunch of financial stuff and personal stuff. I think this was really kind of his way of just relieving some stress.
Absolutely. And you know, it feels like we're beginning an odyssey here. It's almost like a new journey.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a different album, but it feels like we're on the second leg of our journey after listening to the first part of the album. We were geared up for it, and now we're going to go through it. Like we were preparing, and now we're on our way on the journey. And Here Comes the Sun is just such an excellent way to introduce us to this mm-hmm. this new part of our journey. It's almost like something in a way after Come Together is such a harsh kind of headbanger like right. You're talking about, and then you have Something, and it's such a sweet song, and it kind of it gives
pulls
you
back on yeah that it, kind of harsh
absolutely it gives you two faces of the record. You're right. Going to be seeing all of this, and you're going to be experiencing a lot of emotion throughout the latter half of the record. And with the exception of the first two tracks on this side, Here Comes the Sun and Because, which we're about to play in a minute, there is an entirely one song suite. I say one song with quotes. It's a medley.
Yeah.
The Abbey Road medley is a combination of a bunch of different songs written by McCartney that go all the way through and act as one song or one cohesive idea, and they flow very well.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about it. Although there is a slight break after She Came In Through the Bathroom Window, and we're going to stop and talk about a few of the songs we just heard. But here is Because by the Beatles.
Sky is blue.
right, that was Because by the Beatles, and it's just such a entrancing sort of cosmic feeling track, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly how I would describe it. It really kind of pulls you in, and you're kind of like, where is this going? But and it sounds kind of sad, but at the same time, it's kind of like tapping into the mind. I don't know. It's a really neat track. I love it.
Absolutely. They apparently recorded it three-part harmony, but with...
They were triple tracked.
Yeah, they triple tracked it. So really you're hearing nine voices.
Between George, Paul, and John.
Absolutely, yeah. And it really shows. It's very haunting in that. And, yes. And it feels like a full choir of three Johns, three Pauls, and three Georges.
Yeah. It's a little unsettling, but... I really enjoy that. I think that's what gives it that character of, you know, and the lyrics alone too, is just kind of like, oh,
yeah,
it makes you think. It's like, okay.
Oh, I see. It's, it's a little dark, and it comes from the, apparently it comes from Moonlight Sonata by Beethoven.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with that one, in C sharp minor for the music players out there. It really shows that sort of arpeggio following, but of course they add their own touches like the synth and some bass parts, but it's a really haunting track, and I think it seegs well into the next song, which becomes the Abbey Road Medley. This is starting with You Never Give Me Your Money, which starts off the Abbey Road Medley. Here it is.
Good to heaven.
That was the first part of the Abbey Road medley, as written by Paul McCartney and performed by the Beatles on the B-side of Abbey Road. A lot to unpack here, eh?
Yeah. A lot of content.
Honestly, in those four songs alone, or was it five? Five.
Yeah.
In those five songs alone, so much versatility to start off with. I mean, every song is completely different.
Absolutely.
But they go hand in hand so well.
Yeah, exactly. It's so uniquely, each of them is like a character, but they're all in the same story. It's all, you know, woven together.
I know. It's just...
it's beautiful.
It's so interesting. Okay, let's go through each track real quick.
Sure.
You have a story for You Never Give Me Your Money?
You know, it's kind of broken up into three separate parts.
Yeah, that's also indicative of Paul's style.
Very, very storytelling. I mean, think
about like Band on the Run. Like that song basically in three different parts, and that's kind of how You Never Give Me Your Money feels.
Yeah, I think like the beginning obviously is referring to, you know, some financial probably problems that the band was having, and, you know, they can never get the real money. They just get this funny paper, and you know, it's kind of looking down. It's kind of a sad song, but in the end, it's kind of an uplifting part. He's kind of driving off into to nowhere and just kind of forgetting all his troubles. And it's just that kind of typical thing that Paul does, you know, or it kind of makes it optimistic and like a story and stuff. Kind of reminds me of Day in the Life in some
way. It does kind of feel like a lot of Day in the Life. The Sun King, or Sun King, I guess, as it's written on the album, is a very, very huge change in vibe.
Yes.
There's sort of like this quiet, you kind of blend in from You Never Give Me Your Money with cricket sounds and night noises. And
from that kind of like a rhyme, the childhood, like a nursery rhyme, you know, at the end of You Never Give Me Any of Your Money.
Mm-hmm.
Like there is like a little nursery rhyme in it, and it slowly dissipates into those kind of cricket sounds.
Yeah.
And kind of reminds me of like dusk kind of.
Yeah, kind of like a dusk feel. And they say the lyric, "Here comes the Sun King," and kind of refers to the "Here comes the Sun," I would assume, by
probably
the earlier song, as you heard earlier. That was redundant. Mean Mr. Mustard is really cool. I like that one.
What a funny song. I mean, it's so harsh, not harsh, but like it's so like rugged. It's dirty even.
Yeah, you know, it's dirty, just like the character, I guess, that they're trying to portray. Yeah. And I really like the way it segues into Polythene Pam right after it, which is also, I think that song is really great. I love, it's very powerful and strong, and it kind of reminds me of those old blues tunes that use a lot more drum, and they kind of use that ching, 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 you know, that kind of strumming, harder guitar strumming. And I like that a lot.
You know, it's just, you know, all of it's so cohesive. You know, Mean Mr. Mustard going straight into Polythene Pam, which wasn't actually the first initial idea for the Beatles, but...
There was another song, and we'll talk about that after the record finishes.
Right. Not to give it away, but Mean Mr. Mustard and Polythene Pam, to me, is kind of like the turning points for the medley. It really feels like, you know, it's all one cohesive story. It's all one cohesive kind of sound and vibe in the sense of, like, you know, it's a medley, but it really feels like there's different tones and stuff happening.
Yeah, and you can really feel that turn at the solo when George plays at the solo there.
Mm-hmm.
Is George playing, right?
I'm not entirely sure, but could
be. Well, at the guitar solo in Polythene Pam, it really feels like it switches. Like, that's like the climax of the story, and we're going back down. If you guys remember third grade English class, we were talking about the mountain for storytelling.
Right.
All right, She Came In Through the Bathroom Window. Really interesting song.
Right. I mean, you know, just looking at the track list, you know, if you're first looking at it, you know, you read these names of these tracks, and you're like, what on earth is going on? But it's a funny story, She Came In Through the Bathroom Window. It's about, you know, some excited fans, some excited apple scruffs, as they would say back then, getting too excited, and one of them actually broke into Paul McCartney's house.
Yep.
And that's kind of the inspiration for the song, and they took a bunch of things, and I guess Paul, instead of, you know, turning it into something, I guess, not useful. I mean, I don't know how you can turn in a robbery into something useful, but he certainly did by making the song. And so inspiration kind of comes from anywhere. And, you know, for Paul, without being broken into, we would have never probably got that song.
Yeah.
Kind of funny.
It is pretty funny. You know, it's like, oh, too bad the Beatles broke up, or too bad Paul got his house broken.
Right.
But at least some good songs came out of it.
it's a great song.
All right. I think it's also a great way to segue into the latter half of the Abbey Road medley. Here is the last part of Abbey Road medley and the last part of Abbey Road. Just a quick disclaimer. You will hear a few seconds of silence at the very end because there is a little bit more. All right. This is the rest of Abbey Road.
Once there was a way to get back homeward. Once there was a way to get back home. Sleep pretty darling, do not cry, and I will sing a lullaby. Your eyes smile will sing a lullaby. Once there was a way to get back homeward. Once there was a way to get back home. Sleepy darling, do not cry, and I will sing a lullaby.
Gotta get a belly full of wine. My Majesty's a pretty nice girl. Someday I'm gonna make a mine. Oh yeah, someday I'm gonna make a mine.
Little surprise for you there at the very end. Surprise for everybody listening back in 1969 as well.
It was a hidden track.
Hidden track.
Wasn't even on the original track list on the album and wasn't even on the record label.
That's right. And those last three songs you heard were Golden Slumbers, Carry That Weight, and The End with the little fourth hidden bonus track, Her Majesty.
Yeah.
Which, actually, that song was supposed to go in between Mean Mr. Mustard and Polythene Pam. That's where that stray chord comes from. That was supposed to be ending Mean Mr. Mustard. So it was ba-dum-bum-ba, and Her Majesty would play. Yeah. But I like it there fine. I much prefer that. Like, what were you saying earlier about
I was just saying that, you know, especially with Abbey Road, you know, this was the last album
that they recorded.
That recorded.
And, I mean, Let It Be came out later, right. But they didn't record it.
Yeah, but it wasn't like their last, you know, hoorah kind of thing. I mean, Let It Be came out. But, you know, Abbey Road was kind of like it for them, for the band and all. You know, in fact, actually, I believe 6 days before Abbey Road released, John actually announced that he was, you know, out from the Beatles. Mm-hmm. And so The End, we're kind of going backwards, but The End really feels like the end. It feels kind of sad, but it's also kind of a celebratory of like all their commemorating of all their stuff that they've done. And once the track ends, you're kind of like, oh man, I want more. I wish there was something more. And for people back in 1969, they certainly got that with, you know, the hidden track, Her Majesty, suddenly, you know, blares out. And it's a sweet little tune from Paul, but you know, it kind of gave way to bonus tracks in the future.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, the other tracks, the way they all sieged together on the B side or the second side, whatever you want to say, really set a standard for ideas of prog rock at the time. Like, this wasn't necessarily a prog record, but it definitely set a standard for tracks leaking into each other. Sort of like what they did with Sgt. Pepper, where they did the Sgt. Pepper opening track into With a Little Help from My Friends. Mm-hmm. Think about Dark Side of the Moon, how that album basically took this, the last side, and made it an entire record. You have an entire record that's essentially one song, one concept, but vastly different, but with some melodies that you hear before or after, whatever. And that's sort of what they do here, and it sets a precedent for albums that would want to be like that.
Yeah, I think it influences artists and musicians to this day. I mean, certainly we're talking about it
exactly
50 years afterwards.
We weren't even there, man.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, you don't even have to be. You know, Abbey Road is just the gift that keeps on giving, and the Beatles certainly are that way too. And it's just so inspirational. I don't know where I would be in life, truthfully, if it were not for the Beatles.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, it feels like a good book, because you can go back and read a good book and find something new every time. You can listen to this record multiple times and find something new and exciting every time. And I also came with another analogy. I called it like a full meal.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was like you have the appetizers, which are come together, something. No offense to the tracks after, but it's kind of like you're waiting for the meal after that. You're kind of talking with friends, you know. And then I Want You as the food gets here, because, you know, you want that food. And the rest of the album is eating it and enjoying it. The End is when the food's gone, and Her Majesty is a little dessert at the end.
The cherry on top, yeah. Perfect analogy. Well, let's go into Golden Slumbers.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about that. That, I think, initially was Paul's kind of like, I don't know, kind of like a lullaby, if you think about it.
It seems kind of lullaby-ish.
I think I read somewhere about, you know, he was playing at the piano, and Golden Slumbers was, like, the title, the name of it, was actually on the piano, like, in one of the books I was going through, but he just made his own melody and lyrics to it. And
they tended to do that a lot.
It's a sweet song. It's really good.
It is. It's nice.
And then, of course, Carry the Weight is kind of like, you know, banger, kind of just bring you back into
and I love the way that drum theme, the motif of the drums in Golden Slumbers, that bum 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 gold, and they start Golden Slumbers, and then they do that same drum motif to lead into Carry That Weight, which I think is brilliant. That's an excellent way to do that.
I love Carry That Weight. It's you know, again, Paul McCartney is doing a song that is about something probably troubling, but makes it a very uplifting kind of a optimistic kind of way at least for me, I think it certainly feels like, you know, yeah, life is hard, but you got to carry that weight and keep on moving.
Absolutely. And maybe that was them kind of talking to the fans. You got to carry that weight of us leaving.
Maybe. It could have been. Yeah.
Perhaps. They were kind of cryptic like that at times.
For sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many meetings. And like you said before, you could always listen to this album again and find stuff that you didn't even hear on the first time.
I did actually. When I heard Here Comes the Sun a few times, I noticed the synth in there, da na 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 na. I noticed how it had kind of like a sine chorus on it, you know, and it was more wavy than I originally thought it was, and it's nice to hear that. I'm like, oh, nice,
yeah.
And the end, of course, is it's over, you know,
it's over.
It's the end. Yeah. In the end, and I think it's a great way to end a Beatles record. They're really their last recorded. In fact, the end was the last song all four Beatles recorded together. They did a recording of, was it I, Me, Mine? But John wasn't present, so it wasn't all the Beatles.
Right.
And but yeah, the end was literally the last song all four recorded. And the last lyric, in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make. It's a perfect way to describe their transition from these kids from Liverpool playing Britpop stuff and essentially defining an entire musical generation, and where they on the other side through the hippie movement and the late 60s, they came out with these new ideas of love and everything. And it's a great way to show their journey as a band and as a listener.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. If you compare Love Me Do to that last line in the end,
that's great.
You know, it's just really something to kind of behold. I agree with you. They certainly change, and you felt like you were changing with them.
Yeah, it's like you were growing up with the Beatles. Yeah, exactly. When you see that, you kind of see yourself as like a young kid as you grow older and older, and you find out new things, and you're completely different. Like the Red and Blue albums, where it's the Beatles when they're like really young, looking down, and then the Blue album is them in 1969, and they just look so different. There's hair everywhere. They got different clothes on. They all look completely different. And you can see people growing up, and you feel that you've grown up. A generation grew up. It was something different. They've been through all kinds of stuff in that time period and coming out on the other side. And I think the Beatles are very representative of that. It's a very beautiful thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're talking about it 50 years later. And, you know, like I said before, you know, you don't have to be from that time to really, you know, have your own experience with the Beatles, and especially this record. It's something to behold, and I think it'll just stand the test of time.
And that's, you know, that's, I absolutely agree, and that's exactly what this show is about. It's about finding music and applying it to your life, and that's what I think rock does. Rock is the most universal type of music there is. It doesn't matter what race, gender, whatever you are, it's for everyone. Rock music is for everyone, and the Beatles are absolutely no exception. They are literally for everybody. Yeah. There is something in there for everyone that can be applied to their everyday lives, and it's so great. It's so timeless. I don't have to be in 1969 to feel this record. This record could have been made today, and it would still be, I would assume, as popular as it was at the time. It's just so great, and That's exactly what I'm trying to do here.
Yeah, amen, dude.
Yeah, thanks.
That's great. Couldn't have said it better to myself. So
thanks. All right, that's my show. That was Abbey Road's 50th anniversary. Hope you guys really enjoyed it. I'm going to try to have this same recording played at the next block, so just listen up. Next week, I'm going to be doing next week or maybe the week after, in the coming weeks, I'm going to be doing a week dedicated to 1959 jazz records. So I'll be doing Time Out by Dave Brubeck Quartet, Mingus Alm by Charlie Mingus, and Kind of Blue by Miles Davis. And that'll be good too. And the week after that, I plan on doing a Woodstock week, and I'll just do all the Woodstock stuff from 1969, because I'm doing some 50th anniversary stuff.
Yeah,
that'd be cool. Guys, thanks. I'd like to say thanks a lot to my good friend here, Robbie Ibanez. He's been a great host.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
It's amazing. I couldn't have enjoyed it more than I already did. You know, it's really fun to talk about this stuff.
I know, it's great. And it's great to have a good friend to talk about it, too.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys. This has been Cougar Vinyl. I'm Mason Vasquez for CougRadio.com. Put down that phone, spin some records, and find out what really matters in life. Catch you next week.